Welcome to Tunnel Talk, a No Facts, All Feelings wrestling podcast. I'm Allie.
I'm Ann.
And I'm Leah. We're giggly today.
Good job, everybody.
Thank you. How are you guys doing this week?
Well, did you guys enjoy all the free time that we had with only one episode of Dynamite?
It's crazy to not have a weekend show. Every week, Leah does me a kindness. So I do our schedule, but Leah puts all like the matches from the week together for me. So I know what happened. And I went in to look at it this morning. I was staggered. I was like, this is like three matches. This is nothing. What a delight. How free I feel.
And can you imagine that, like, when we started this podcast, that's what it was? Like,
yeah, that's like why we were watching Dark and Elevation all the time. And I don't think there was even Elevation when we started.
No, actually. It was literally
just started because Paul White had just come into our lives.
Yeah.
The biggest man who ever lived,
that's
I believe.
Right. That was a very early episode title. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was in its infancy.
Yeah.
In its infancy.
But it was like we watched Dynamite, BTE, and then occasionally the YouTube shows when people we liked was on it. And that was what wrestling was.
Yeah. Oh. It wasn't kind of this all-consuming thing that we were doing all day, every day.
15 hours of government-mandated wrestling?
we hadn't even heard of Stardom. And
this is what the Biden administration has spent the last 4 years working on. Instead of solving real issues.
My brother has this thing where, like, every time you complain about something really innocuous and like without any kind of cause, he goes, that's life in Joe Biden's America. So you just like, there's too much wrestling to watch. That's life in Joe Biden's America.
So and true. I think that's a universal problem. Everybody is complaining about it. And I did forget to check in with you about this earlier. Are you prepared to share what's making you happy this week?
I actually am prepared, but I thought you weren't going to remember. We were just going to skip it. And I was like,
oh, no.
You can keep for next week. I'm not going to bring it up. But of course,
I know Leah won't, because in this one aspect of our podcast, she's a very bad student. But you can always feel free to tell me that I forgot to tell you that it's time to tell us what's making you happy.
It's true. But no, I will tell you, I had been preparing. Although then when you didn't remind me, now I didn't prepare my little monologue in my head. But
do you think you can do it off the cuff?
We'll see.
We're looking at you so supportively.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I need to hold the hands of my girls while I get into this. A few years ago I went off caffeine because I thought it might help me sleep better, and unfortunately it did. So that was good.
Unfair.
Yeah, it's terrible. And they used to make caffeine-free Diet Dr. Pepper. I'm a Diet Dr. Pepper girl. My whole family is. I think it's a regional thing because Dustin Chuck Taylor is also a Diet Dr. Pepper girl.
I did. When I was in college, I was a huge Diet Dr. Pepper girl.
It's the stuff. And caffeine-free Diet Dr. Pepper used to be sold in my local supermarket. And then the pandemic hit, and I think there was an aluminum shortage. And, like, anyway, a lot of weird diet sodas, caffeine-free diet sodas, like, just disappeared. I think this is also probably a casualty of the seltzer market, which I am resentful of. Yeah, so anyway, so I no longer could have Diet Dr. Pepper, but then I was like, well, if I have like one in the morning, that's like not so bad because it has a lot less caffeine than coffee. And then I started drinking actually Dr. Pepper Cream Zero. Which and sounds repulsive, but
it does. What is that?
It's, you know, just an additional. It's basically a Diet Dr. Pepper and cream is their one of their new flavors. So it's like as though you'd poured cream in it, but it's really really good.
I've heard a lot of that's like a it's like a Mormon / Utah thing, right? Is to go to get like put milk in your.
Oh, is it a Mormon
Coke?
Thing? I did see a thing of like a TikToker like making fun of a TikTok video where they have like a Diet Coke and then they pour cream in it, and she was like, that's repulsive. But then she went and like tried it and was like, oh, actually, I like it.
I think it's a Utah Mormon thing. And I'm sorry, but those are pretty interchangeable. So. if it's a big thing in Utah, it's probably because it's a big thing in the Mormon community, I believe.
Although they can't have caffeine, I don't think so.
Oh, well, in that case, I don't friggin' know. Well, but well, okay.
Maybe they're doing so it in a caffeine free. Anyway,
you're drinking your creams.
I'm drinking my Dr. Pepper and Cream Zero soda in the mornings, and it's so good. It's like I've been doing this for over four years ish. I don't know when I landed on it. Probably less than that. Probably took me a while in the pandemic to adjust my life. Mm-hmm. But like honestly, when I'm going to bed at night, I think, oh, but in the morning I can have my little treat. I can have my one caffeinated soda. I'm permitted. It's my little
in Dr. Joe Pepper Biden's America.
In Joe Biden's America. And I was out visiting my nephews, and I asked my brother. I was like, oh, do you have any Diet Dr. Pepper? Because that was like our normal family drink. And he was like, oh yeah. And he was like, well, it's actually like Dr. Pepper and Cream Zero. And I was like, oh no, that's my favorite. That's even better. Like, don't apologize for that. So.
Well, and
so that's what's making me happy.
That's fascinating because I guessed it was going to be your capitalism purchase this week. And I was very excited to hear you describe that.
Wait, what?
Your Dustin capitalism purchase. Oh.
I was not going to blow up my spot.
That's what I'm here for, baby.
Thanks so much.
I think people will really relate to what you're about to explain.
Yeah, so like last week on Dynamite, there was a couple in the crowd wearing like what were clearly best friends sweatsuits, tracksuits. And I was like, haha, that's funny. And I was like, I wonder like if I could find them online, like how hard are they to find, right? So it's like a little Google excursion. So during Dynamite, I'm Googling. I find it on Amazon. It's an 80s hip-hop costume, I think is what it's labeled as.
All right. Okay.
It's on sale for $40. It comes with some wristbands and sunglasses and an inflatable radio. A real bargain. It's clearly the exact best friend's sweatsuit. I think it's really funny. And then I don't know what happened to me, but a few days later, I got an Amazon box and I bought it. I bought it. It's comfortable.
The picture that we received of Anne in this sweatsuit was so funny because her face was so smug.
She looked pleased so cute,
at the
first
same
of all.
Time. So an angel. Cute. So cute. Absolute
and
angel.
And so
but
pleased
also,
with herself.
She knew it and she was like, it's a comfortable sweatsuit.
Look what I'm wearing. I forgot I did this.
It's my whole new personality.
I don't know why I decided to buy it. I just saw that it was cheap and I must have been like, great, it's mine now. Now I have it in my home.
Can I ask at what time of day you believe that you made this purchase and promptly forgot about it?
It was during Dynamite. I think it was between 9 and 10 p.m. during Dynamite.
That makes sense because there's a lot going on and a lot to monitor in that period.
So. Yeah, you're like there's a lot happening. I'm like in three different group chats. I'm watching the TV. I am purchasing best friend's sweatsuits without noticing.
The finger slips for a mere second and suddenly the tracksuit is in the mail. And you're immediately having to look at the learning tree again. So who could
exactly.
blame you?
Yep, that's exactly what happened because I did completely forget. And then I was like, I don't think I ordered it. What is this? So that was quite a little surprise when I opened it up.
Wow. Well, those are two beautiful things to be making you happy this week. And
thank you,
Leah, for holding Anne accountable and making sure that she shared that.
And even when you brought it up, I'd forgotten again that I have it. I'm like, what capitalism purchase are you talking about?
I said that, you looked at me blankly and I was like, the Dustin purchase? And even then there was like another second before you were like,
Dustin purchase. It does not want to stay in there. It doesn't sound right that I own it, but I paid $40 American for it plus
an
tax.
80s hip hop costume.
a bargain at twice the price, it sounds like to me.
All I need now is I need someone to do a little caricature sketch of my face to put on a decal so I can like apply it to the jacket.
I bet we have an artistic friend who could do that.
Oh yeah,
I bet we could rustle that up for you.
Rustle it up, yeah, be great. Okay.
Well, that's a little project for us this week, girls. Let's talk wrestling. Let's talk manly graps, as it were. Feel a little punchy.
I didn't like that.
Didn't like it. Okay, let's talk
wrestling. I hate
Let's
that one,
talk
actually.
Wrestling. Do you like that better?
No, I don't. I like it worse. Say what you said.
A Okay, we're talking about the new Elite. Dynamite opened with the special new Elite credits again, which we all loved. We got a vignette early in the show in which Matthew and Nicholas were driving little JB and Okada to school and stole Tony Khan's parking spot at the venue. And they also had kidnapped a cameraman who I think was in the trunk. Was he in the trunk of the SUV? Anyway, we got a hospital promo from Kenny in which he basically was like, well, this is seems pretty rude that you did this to me.
but he didn't seem very like deeply betrayed. It was just kind of like, guys.
I do think it has to be like a little bit of a consequence of being friends with the Young Bucks where you're like, they can't help it. That's true.
I should have seen it coming.
Yeah. A scorpion's going to do what a scorpion's going to do. And it did look very much like, oh my God, well, I guess we'll deal with this at another time. But
and Kenny must also be a little bit like, well, they got there first. I mean, it was a flip of the coin whether it was going to be me or them.
So true.
He did say, though, that he seemed to have finally remembered that he is also an EVP. And he said, well, if you guys are abusing your EVP powers, okay, maybe I can abuse my EVP powers. So he said that he was going to set an Anarchy in the Arena match for Double or Nothing with the new Elite on one side and four men of his choosing to comprise Team AEW on the other side. And so he said that the first two men that he would choose were the greatest tag team in AEW history, possibly the greatest tag team in all of professional wrestling history. Two guys that had the courage to step up to you, FTR. We didn't like hearing that. We suspected it was coming.
I hope they're scanning his brain while he's in the hospital.
Listen, a lot of people have tried to hold Tony Khan accountable for how he's treating the wrestlers, how he's taking care of them, like medically. But I think that something needs to be done. There's no way they should have let Kenny record a promo while he was clearly high. He was on a lot of pain meds. He was in pain. He was saying wild shit.
He was vulnerable.
Shit.
He was vulnerable. Yeah.
And
he was
taken
lying.
Advantage of. Who put a camera in front of him when he clearly was out of touch with reality?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know how they say in vino veritas, but in pain meds, lies. In pain meds,
yeah. Everyone says that. In fentanyl, in morphine, in opioid, lies.
Lies. Absolute lies. I also loved Kenny just like now being like, I think that I also have power, especially because like, I mean, Kenny's always working, but like that stream that he did where he was like, well, I don't really have power. I've never had power. I have an EVP title, but I don't make decisions. They don't really let me make decisions. And I love the kayfabe idea that like his Twitch chat were like, Kenny, you are an EVP though. Like you could.
They can't tell you what to do.
And then he just sat there and was like, I think I do. I could seize the means of production.
I had said last week, I think when we were watching Dynamite, I was like, I really want to see like Kenny be like, I'm an EVP too. I also can make crazy decisions, and to have him and the Bucks like sketches of them backstage just like fighting over like minor production issues because they're just jockeying for power, which I think would work because of. I think you should explain this, Leah, that the one time that you were trying to remember who had founded AEW and you were like, it's like,
I was telling my best friend, me and Sarah were telling our mutual best friend about Cody leaving. And I literally was like, well, okay, so there's three EVPs. And Sarah was like, three? And I turned to her like she was crazy. And I was like, yeah, Kenny, Cody, and the Bucks. And she was like, the Bucks are different people. They each get a vote.
But I said, I felt like in kayfabe, the Bucks would also not always remember that. If they were arguing over things with Kenny, they would be like, well, our vote is this. And Kenny would be like, well, my vote is this. And it would be like, well, we're at a standstill. I don't think they would always remember that.
I don't think they would. No, they'd be like, if only there's someone here to break the tie. We need Cody back.
Not that I really want AEW to do WWE references in this current situation, but I did just read someone saying that, like, when Vince was still there, he and Triple H were like fighting for power, where Triple H would like change one minor production thing, and then whoever he changed it with would go back and tell Vince, and Vince would immediately put it back. And I do sort of want like a sketch of, like, I don't even know, like Jerry Lynn being like, okay, Kenny, the Bucks told me to change the camera to this angle, and Kenny's like, put it back.
I do want like 2 hours of a kind of old fashioned farce where it's like the show is not going well, but as a meta commentary. So it's like a lot of the time you're like backstage with wrestlers coming off being like, okay, well, I was getting 5 different things told to me in the middle of that match. So yeah, no, it wasn't a great match. No. And it's
just Kenny like
and
backstage segments where like a person runs in one door and then they leave and then someone else comes in the other door. Is like Frasier so level.
just a little sit comedy.
Yeah.
All right. What are we even talking about? Oh, FTR. Okay. So then at the end of the show, we had the New Elite come out and give a little in-ring promo, where, you know, they were just like, we're in charge now. And Nick said he was speaking to FTR in the ether. He said, good luck finding 2 other people with big enough balls to face the Elite. We run this damn show. So of course FTR immediately come out, and Dax FTR says, I knew going into this fight it wasn't going to be easy to find a couple of guys willing to fight against the EVPs of this company, but after a little bit of convincing, those big balls you're talking about, I think I found a couple guys who have big enough balls for the job. I personally didn't enjoy the idea that FTR had been backstage for most of the show looking for big balls.
Seems like an HR violation. I don't know.
And what's annoying is if it was any other tag team, we would have thought that was funny.
For sure. But my heart is stone about stone. FTR. I honestly can't believe it.
I know. Although we did say that their match against the Bucks was good at the last pay-per-view, which I thought was extremely broad-minded of us.
It was, and we were very magnanimous about it.
People should give us a lot of credit for that.
Well, the fact that we're being rewarded for that by having to watch another one is fucking absurd.
It's absolutely absurd. I don't know why it's happening.
Well, look, the other two men come out who will be on the team, and they're Eddie Kingston and Brian Danielson. And so let's step back and let's just talk about like the makeup of Team AEW here. What are your thoughts? These are the we're supposed to be rooting for this group.
It's crazy. Eddie, sure, absolutely. 100% Team AEW. FTR, absolutely not. Especially when it's like they were the most, like when we're having this whole Punk thing in the mix, like they were the most undermining of AEW. Yeah. Like Dax did his whole podcast. I can't get over it. And then Danielson, I think you could get away with if the other three guys were extreme AEW original guys, but like he's real borderline even then.
It's not even that I'm that mad about Bryan Danielson being a ex-WWE guy. It's just that Bryan Danielson has never really given a stirring, like, we are AEW, like, speech. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I believe that he likes AEW, but I think he likes it because it lets him do the things he wants to do. I've never gotten the feeling that he believes in Change the World or that, you know what I mean? Like, I just...
Okay, here's an idea.
Yeah.
We get backstage. Easily, they let us back there.
Oh, yeah.
And we hold auditions for Team AEW, and it's fully speech based. It's only oration. You come in, and actually, maybe we should do like a blind casting. So there's maybe like a curtain between us.
So we can't tell who they are. We just hear their voices, and we say, "Who is that? I have no idea."
To be honest, I think that would mostly work on me. I think I mostly wouldn't know who it was. And then you give a stirring speech, and then we choose the best of the speeches, and those are the wrestlers.
So then we end up with Eddie, Mox, probably Hangman, and who would be number 4?
A fourth beautiful orator. I can't think of one off the top of my head, but we've got to have some floating around. Who else has ever given a promo that we loved?
Well, no one else ever. It's just those three.
No one's coming to mind. Well, anyway, we'll sit on that idea. I don't think it. Look, a number of people have said, like, this is clearly a big storyline that is has been, you know, ballooning and offshooting, and, you know, it's kind of touching lots of other storylines, which I think is awesome. I think that's really fun. But that also means that whatever happens at Double or Nothing is not going to resolve this situation. I think it's very unlikely that the Elite are going to lose to fucking FDR.
Make a mess. I hope not. I don't feel that confident. That would be too degrading.
I need to see Dax pinned. Do they even pin an Anarchy in the Arena? How do you win?
There is a pin, right? But Eddie's going to take it.
Eddie's going to take it, yeah.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
That's what Eddie's
there's
there
no
for.
Way it's Dax, yeah.
There's no fucking justice in this society for lots of other bigger reasons, but for this one as well.
Someone in the Social Suplex Discord said, Mighty Dave. I was obsessed with this because it just captured how I feel. It's overall, I really like the EVP angle, but as soon as I think about the Bucks, JB, Okada being the evil usurpers of AEW and FTR, the good guy defenders, I feel like I am losing my mind. Yeah.
It's dead on.
Especially because as part of this argument, the Bucks have seized the show and are making the decisions. And these have been a bunch of baller episodes. Like, why wouldn't you want to keep them in power? My dad has this theory of government that the best mayors embezzle a little bit. He's like,
wow, that's a real New England theory of government.
You can't trust an honest man.
Exactly. So this is my thing where I'm like, why would I take them out of power? They're evil. Who gives a shit? They're keeping our roads salted. The streets, the potholes are filled. Who cares?
The shirts are tucked in. Okay. Yes, some people are getting beaten up, like, because they've personally made enemies of the EVPs. That's life, baby.
That's the price we're paying for a good show, and I am willing to pay it.
For a functioning society. So interesting. Interesting little political insight there. I agree. I don't know why anyone would want to, you know, get him out of the hot seat. I think they're killing it. I just hope, you know, let's get this team AEW defeated. Eddie, I'm sorry, you don't deserve this. Brian Danielson, you'll be fine. Okay, so I'm not worried about you. FDR, I want you in that cage in the sky. I want you gone.
People were also saying it feels more like Dynamite versus Collision than the Elite versus a team AEW, which is also dead on. And it's like, that's so distressing. Collision can't be the good guys. That's not how that works.
No, this is completely fucked. And it's also fucked that, like, Eddie was teaming with the Bucks against Brian Danielson not that long ago.
I know. This grab bag stuff is crazy. Also, I can't believe I'm in a position again where it's like, well, we just have to get this over with FTR yet again. Like, and then they'll probably just come back for the next pay-per-view. Like,
sometimes I feel like FTR is somehow the only team I have ever watched the Young Bucks fight.
I know.
Somehow.
And it's like, I think that, like, people are like, well, they're the Bucks' is, like, best rival and,
no,
like, most important rival. And
wrong.
I'm like, no, that's the Lucha Brothers.
That's the Lucha Brothers.
The Lucha Brothers are there, and possibly Motor City Machine Guns if they ever show up.
Listen, we would love for them to show up, and we'd love to let them into our hearts. We are desperate for another beautiful married tag team that we could love. Okay?
Yeah.
Desperate. Please come to me. But it's not FTR. I would rather watch the Bucks fight Top Flight for the next like three pay-per-view cycles.
100% the last time.
I would rather watch the Bucks kill Top Flight in the
ring. We're talking a lot about the Bucks killing people in the ring in the last
I know, it's kind of a
months.
New gimmick I'm working on for them called EVP Assassin. Okay. Also on Dynamite. Oh, do you want to say anything about Matt Jackson's jacket?
It looks like Cruella DeVille.
Yeah, beautiful. Lovely. Honestly, it was. I immediately started Googling. I was like trying to figure out, following Anne's example, where the jacket had come from. Because I was like, that's kind of one of the nicer looking garments I've seen you guys
in. Well, I like saw them walking in and I was like, oh, it's so funny that Matt's wearing like a pretty normal suit and Nick's wearing like this garish yellow shiny suit. And then Matt turned and I was like, oh, it's not a normal suit. That's a two-tone suit. I could only see one tone.
I was obsessed with it because his gimmick right now is not that far away from, yeah, I'll skin a bunch of dogs for a nice coat.
He might skin them, but then he would thank them, too. He'd be like, great coat. You're killing it. I'm killing you. You're killing it. Okay. Also on Dynamite, Swerve got an in-ring promo in which he called out Christian Cage, saying, I can't blame you for what you did. Beating him up, presumably. You see someone at the top, you go for that person. I need you to come out here and handle business with me. So Christian did come out, accompanied by his whole beautiful family, which I love. We had a little light back and forth about Swerve's gold teeth. And Swerve was clearly feeling very prepared because he had brought the Mogul Embassy with him to defend him against the patriarchy. But unfortunately, at the pivotal moment, Brian Cage turned on him and the embassy beat Swerve up. And they beat him up a little, and then they beat him up a little more, and then they beat him up a lot and a lot more. And they just really beat him up quite a bit. And Christian Cage went backstage where we saw the EVPs applauding him, and he thanked them for their great idea and said, it's the start of a very fruitful working relationship, and walked off, leaving Matt and Nick to turn to each other. And I think it was Matthew who said, and I don't think anyone could describe what happened here as a bitch move.
And it was, the voice was kind of as if like what Swerve said has like been like ping ponging in his head. And he's been no, you're the bitch in the shower.
Yes.
This is Matt Jackson being very girl coded. Cause having been in more male dominated spaces on the internet in the wrestling community that I'm used to, they don't worry about being bitches at all. Whereas women are always worried that someone will think they're a bitch.
So true.
Just like saying the meanest things to each other all the time.
That is so true. It is extremely girl coded that he was like, but I'm actually still a really nice person.
Yeah, that wasn't a bitch move at all. And it really bothers me that someone would say that.
Okay. What did you guys think about the Christian and Swerve exchange?
It was a little more generic than I was hoping from them, but I think overall, like, they both delivered it well. Like, it was totally fine. Like, I didn't have any beef with it at all. And this whole, like, the embassy turning on Swerve, I'm very interested in, because I think Swerve with no minions and maybe having to, like, take stock of himself could send him in, like, a more clear, like, babyface type direction. Yeah. And if he needs to, like, make friends instead of having minions and goons, like, that could be an interesting little character development. So I think it, like, sets him up where it's like, hopefully it'll pay off and he'll do something interesting with it. But I do think it's like a good direction, potentially.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was one of those things where it's like they were working backwards in the wrong way, where it's like they needed the embassy to turn on Swerve. And so Christian was just there to like knock over the first domino. And it's kind of, it wasn't enough about Christian, but it was fine. They needed to do that, so. To give Brian Cage credit, I like on Twitter later, he was like, he retweeted something Swerve said and said, yeah, you took the wrong Cage to Wembley. And I like had this moment where I was like, oh, that's a good reason to be like, hey, we were your goons. But part of that, like the reward system is supposed to be that you like the it trickles down and you're not. I mean, as Reagan taught
trickle down economy
don't work. It don't work. Yeah. No. But so he's like,
powerful commentary from Brian Cage, if you think about it.
And he's seizing the means of production. You know, he gets it. Great character work from Brian Cage.
But yeah, so like for him to be like, you know, here you are. You're the world champion. What have we got? We've got nothing out of this. Fuck this. Is actually a pretty good motivation. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I thought Swerve got a really good, the thing where he said to Christian, like, you don't want to get uncomfortable. Like, I don't remember the, it was a good line referencing the cope match.
Like, Christian, I was like, I quit. And then Christian looked like speechless and upset. And I like that a lot too.
Yeah. Well, patriarchs don't like to get got. I mean, there's one thing we know.
So true.
I really liked that. I thought that was zesty. And I agree. I'm very interested to see, like, what... To watch Swerve take stock of the landscape backstage without support. I don't know if he's still going to have Prince Nana. I did have the reaction of, like, we can't lose Prince Nana. He's done nothing wrong. No. Like, Prince Nana, he's just danced and sometimes helped cheat, but that's okay. It's just, you know, he's just a fun guy.
Yeah, he can't lose Nana. I'll be very upset if he doesn't have Nana anymore.
I'm so attached to Nana because I was talking to Sarah about something, and Sarah was, like, lightly annoyed about something she had read where somebody was, like, well, you know, like, Tony gave Swerve Nana, and Sarah was like, no, Swerve took Nana. No one was using him. He was languishing on ROH. Nobody was using him. And Swerve saw that he was being underutilized, and Swerve was like, no, this is what's happening. And so now I'm like, yes, like, Nana was a forgotten toy, and Swerve was smart enough to see that he was worth playing with.
So and he loved the Velveteen Rabbit so much. Rabbit. The Velveteen Rabbit came to life.
And danced.
Nana can't, like, he doesn't have to be a heel manager. He and Swerve can learn how to do good together.
Yeah, I think that would be really nice. Like, what I would kind of like is to see Swerve is just so angry and frustrated and upset, and he's backstage. He's like in his, you know, heel cave or whatever with Nana. I guess it's like maybe it's like his world champion dressing room or something. And
a heel cave kind of implies it's like a man cave kind of situation. It's like the faces have, baby faces have most of the backstage, but there is a heel cave for them to go cram in to do.
Anyway, he's pacing and he's being like, they're going to be so sorry because I'm going to find like the meanest, toughest, hardest guys on the roster, and I'm going to make them my minions, and then we're going to get these guys. And I want Nana to be like, I've got an idea, boss. What if we just, like, what if we don't do that? What if we just chill out and just maybe, like, go to catering and, like, say hi and sit down at a table and just, you know, just get to know people. Just like, make friends.
Yeah, just see who you connect with, you know, be a little bit vulnerable, see who's vulnerable.
Get on the
back.
Apps, you know?
I'm obsessed with thinking about a scenario where, like, Nana kind of, like, get Swerve to, like, open up and, like, meet a bunch of people. And so Swerve's, like, you know, he's hanging out in the back of, like, the BTE background. He's, like, you know, he's hanging out. He's making real friends with the faces and kind of starting to integrate. And that's when Hangman shows up. And Hangman is like, I'm sorry, are we just tolerating Swerve and catering now?
And it would be a great heel opportunity for Hangman to be marching around catering, like knocking people's trays off their table, being like, you people disgust me. How can you hang out with this man after what he did? And like, they're just being like, okay, well, we've all kind of like sometimes done really bad stuff. Like, we're wrestlers. Like, you know, you're in the heel cave for a while and then you're in the glory of the face dressing rooms and then you're back in the heel cave. And they're just being like, and he's pretty fun actually. And he's been like really chill. Hangman's not going to like that.
He's not going to like that.
If you come back from leave and it turns out someone's kind of taken over your job and they're friends with all your people, upsetting. Especially if they broke into your house and threatened your baby.
Yeah.
It would be so juicy if Swerve made friends with the Dark Order and like made them his backup.
That
like,
would be really juicy.
And Hangman be rip shit.
That'd be amazing. And if Alex and John Silver are like, yeah, Swerve is nice to us. He talks to us. He pays attention to us. Yes. We haven't seen you in eight months.
He asks how we've been doing. Mm-hmm. He seems interested because Swerve is learning from Prince Nana. Yeah. Is helping Swerve learn how to have functional relationships and friendships backstage.
Yeah. And they're just like all supporting each other. Hangman's outside the door seeing the Dark Order, you know, sing with Swerve.
Do you ever tune into what we're saying and like just constantly explaining this to, like, I don't know, like Dave Meltzer, and just being like, no, they learn how friendship works.
That's what wrestling's all about, Dave.
I think that Dave Meltzer would be confused by it, but that we are right. And it is what most of wrestling is when you get right down to it. He's like, none of that has happened. None of that has. I don't know why you guys are talking about it so much. None of it's happened. Okay. Any other thoughts about Swerve or the Elite?
I don't think so.
Okay, let's move on, girls. Serena Deeb got a live promo this week in which she said that she had two strokes last year, but the crowd didn't care that much. That wasn't useful what I put there. She was eventually interrupted by Toni Storm, who called her a charity case and threw some money at her. Serena Deeb said, such a crazy line, Toni, I highly suggest you start taking this seriously. And Toni said, fucking no. And then they got into a little fracas, I think. And Toni got like knocked out. Is that correct?
Yeah.
I believe she was knocked out on the ground and Toni Schiavone was looking at her like, that's what you get, girl. For your behaviors. Also on Dynamite, Mariah May fought Harley Cameron with Saraya ringside and won, but Saraya attacked Mariah afterwards. Mina Shirakawa ran out for the save, almost kissed Mariah, but didn't. And then they hugged and drank champagne, and Toni didn't come out and was nowhere to be seen, which was, I believe, someone on commentary emphasized that Toni was not there. So that seems plot relevant. Let's start by talking about briefly about Serena Deeb's promo.
Yeah, it was pretty awkward with the crowd like booing her, and then she's talking about her medical issues, and they're like, oh, I guess we shouldn't boo, but we don't like it. I don't know. I think she has terminal FTR disease where it's like, she's not fun. She's not trying to have fun. She thinks wrestling is deadly serious, even though it's pro wrestling and it's silly. And so it's not fun to watch her.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do want to read this segment, this quote from the promo. She said, I'm wrestling for the Women's World Championship in Vegas at Double or Nothing against Toni Storm. I'm aware of this narrative going around that people are saying Deeb isn't going to be able to defeat Toni Storm. And you know, as much as that upsets me to hear, I also get it. So I wanted to give my reasons why losing at Double or Nothing is not an option for the professor. And I said, that's not something a professor would say. That's something a student would say in a very bad essay that does not get a good grade.
In this essay, I will prove.
Exactly so. Exactly so.
I just remembered they zoomed in on a sign that said Toni Storm greater than Serena Dweeb, which unfortunately is going to be an intrusive thought for me going forward.
Serena Dweeb is so fun.
I know. It'd be a great character. Well, and like, honestly, her saying like, Toni, I highly suggest you start taking this seriously, could be really fun if she played like an over-the-top character being like, please be serious. And everyone's like, no, but she's not. That's not the vibe at all.
No, if she was willing to make a caricature out of this and just really like lean into like, be like, especially with Toni being absurd, it would be very funny for Serena to be like, stop dicking around, get in here and do real wrestling. Like, she could even say the word graps and make it funny, but you know,
I'd love to hear her say the word graps.
Yeah
It's just a, you know, it's like at a certain, you know, what can you say? Like, she really does, we've never really seen her try anything in the promo or gimmick department. I know that some people pointed out that like she used to do like a little bit of a professor gimmick where she would like do her squashes, but it would be like, Professor Deeb is teaching you how to squash, I guess. And it's like, okay, well, that doesn't work for me, brother. I'm gonna need to see a little something more than that for a gimmick to work for me. And she just never really plays with it, and I am sorry. I think it doesn't feel that good for me as a viewer to be like, oh, as a human being, I don't want any human beings to have three strokes and not know why they had them. Okay. But it is uncomfortable for me to watch this promo and just be like, well, you can't just say that to me and expect that alone will make you somebody that I'm interested in or like want to root for here. It's unfortunately, it is insufficient.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. It definitely needs more than that. I wish I had saved Aaron Rutkowski's tweet about when he was like, what did he say in her voice? Where it's like, I've had three seizures. Well, you maybe should get a tincture.
Oh, it was Trevor Dame.
Oh, Trevor Dame.
Yeah. Yeah, that one was very funny. Okay, let's check in quickly about the Tony, Mariah, and Mina storyline. I am worried that sometimes I'm worried that I'm not actually following it that well because I like all the components that I see. But then today I was like kind of like trying to paint a picture of what exactly is happening here in my head. And I thought, I don't know, actually. Like, I know some of the components. I understand that Tony is experiencing a flavor of jealousy. I understand that. I understand that Mariah, from the time that she got here, has had a thing where you're just not quite sure what her game is.
Yeah.
And I understand, I think that Mina and Mariah are on good terms, although what happened, like, Mariah's face after she didn't get kissed in the ring, I was like, okay, but she doesn't like that, so I don't know if that's meaningful. I'm just not sure I fully know where anyone is in, like, an arc at the moment. Yeah. Am I being foolish?
No, you're not.
I feel the same way.
Here's the thing. I'm really, really into Mariah and Mina.
Oh, yeah.
But for sure. I suspect that the story that I understand is one that I've invented in my little head.
Maybe not, though. Tell us.
Is that not so often the case? But please, story time with Leah.
I think that what's happening here, and to make this even worse, I have not seen any of the old Hollywood movies that Tony and Mariah have been like playing around with. So if you're saying to me like right now, oh, I can't believe you don't recognize that it's, you know, from
All Beautiful. About Eve, All about which I haven't Eve. Seen yeah. either.
I haven't seen that one either. And I have seen a lot from this era, but...
Oh, should we all group watch All watch About Eve? Maybe we
should watch it together. I think probably should.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good.
Okay.
We came up with a little assignment for
So, Mariah comes in. She's obsessed with Tony. And she's, like, absolutely, like, no holds barred, obsessed with Tony. And Tony feels incredibly confident in giving her little scraps of attention, and Mariah will do anything to keep like Tony's interest, right? And so they're going along and everything's fine and normal. And then Mina comes, and Mina's energy is kind of like that she and Mariah are fuck buddies, or maybe like hook up at parties, like that,
okay.
like it is all fun. Like Mina is there to have fun. She wants to drink champagne. She wants to dance. She's here. She's here not for a long time, but here for a
very
good time.
Good time. Mm.
And Mariah's energy is that when they were in stardom together, she was in fucking love with Mina, and she's like, "This is it. Mina's come to America to
be with.
She's come to for me. She's come to save me. This is it." And so she's turning her attention to Mina, being like, is this the moment? And so when Mina doesn't kiss her, she's like...
But what Mina...
When she doesn't kiss her, that she's like, this is still not it. You're still keeping me dangling. Why won't you just kiss me?
And it's because Mina actually is like, no, I'm coming to America for crowd reaction, baby.
Yes.
I'm coming to America so that I can get over as a big star.
Yeah. Yeah, and she's happy to have Mariah with her. She likes Mariah. She probably even like loves Mariah, but not to the intensity
that
Mariah
not
has.
Monogamously.
Right. And meanwhile, so then you've got Tony in the background who has had Mariah's unswerving attention.
Yes.
And all of a sudden is losing it. And so what Tony doesn't seem like she understands what she feels for Mariah or whether she can trust Mariah, but she knows she wants that adoration.
And it is true that Tony's behavior is very much like your best friend gets a girlfriend and all of a sudden you're like, I could be a girlfriend. What does she give you that I can't? Oh, she make out with you and bleep, bleep, bleep. I could do it. I mean, that all checks out for me. I agree that I have no idea if it's what.
Yeah.
I think that the Mariah-Tony dynamic, I do understand. I don't know the All About Eve reference, unfortunately, but I understand from like a talented Mr. Ripley dynamic where it's like, erotic mirror love.
Yes.
Of wanting to become someone. But, and also you want them, that's not exactly what she's doing. Anyway, you know, it's, none of this is a complaint because we're so happy with everything we see on screen, but I do sometimes think, like, should I be getting a few more little clues about where people, what people want at any given time? Because I don't always know that. I don't always know the, like, well, this is what I'm trying to get right now.
So Mary, our friend Mary Yuxura, I don't know if that's how she pronounces her username, but was tweeted something where she was like, men are looking at the Mina, Mariah, Tony storyline and saying, is there lesbian subtext there, as if it's not text. And I was like, are men actually answering, like, asking that question? That's then what wild. Do they think is happening?
Like, it's because they've been watching wrestling this whole time and they're like, well, that's all platonic. So, like, this is pretty platonic.
But if it's platonic, what do they think?
Like, what is the text?
Yeah. Right. Describe to me what you think is happening if it's just... Well, I don't know.
Mariah and Tony have been gal pals for some time now. So let's start
just
there.
Just normal friend jealousy with kissing.
Of course, it's an intoxicating psychosexual soup.
Oh, yeah.
Of course. Yeah. And Leah, I have to tell you the story that you just, the yarn you just spun for us.
And most of that seems pretty textual to me. Like, I mean, it's not made up. I think to me, like, what I've been feeling like, I don't know if I'm following this, is maybe just that it hasn't, like, really progressed, like, the last 2 weeks or so. Like, it's just kind of been, well, which is, it's not really a complaint.
I think the thing that I am not sure of is if I was writing this movie or a TV show, it would have to come to a point where Mariah has to choose between Mina and Tony, but Mariah can't choose Mina because she don't go to this school. So if eventually... Like, Mina's not going to be there. So instead you have to ask yourself, what does Mina represent to Mariah that she would choose as an alternate to Tony? And that I don't know the answer to.
That could be, like, her own unique identity, though. Yeah. It's like she's where she's not becoming, like, a clone of Tony, but she's, like, because she and Mina, it's like, they're in love as two individual people and not mirrors of each other. So you could kind of go that direction.
Yeah. Mina, and this is... Mina does not want to love herself. Mina wants to love Mariah for Mariah's. So
exactly.
This is where I think that the talented Mr. Ripley touch point is not serving me that well because...
Well, like, I mean, maybe because, Mariah just murders Tony and then...
Well, yeah. It's like when I'm looking at it through that lens, I'm like, yes, like she shows up and like the love that she feels and the way that she wants to be this person like is real, but becomes like increasingly toxic and fucked up because it's just like, I want to be you, so you can't be you anymore. And I don't know, I guess I had kind of thought, I was like, surely that's where this must end. Although I don't know what it would mean for, you know, she trailed off, not really sure. Well, I think, you know what, I think it seems like we're following it fine, mostly. I think we are, but
I'm very interested to see where they're going, but like I'm not at a point where I'm displeased at all yet, where I'm like, eventually you are going to have to go somewhere, but that's
I'd like a few little character insights at this point. I'd like some kind of little check-in to be like, this is where these people are at in terms of their desires at this moment. And, you know, even some more face acting, just a little, Mariah did some great face acting when she didn't get kissed. She looked confused and devastated about it.
Yeah. All three of these women are capable of really good face acting. Been loving what they've been doing.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Let's move on. Let's talk about Big Cope. He opened Dynamite with a promo in which he beckoned the camera close and said that his mind has been wandering to bad places. And so therefore he asked Tony to make his match versus Brody King a no DQ match. I'm not sure it's like a straight line for me between those things, but
I guess he
wanted to do dark violence. Is that
He wants to beat him up with trash cans.
A really like classic wrestler thing where they're like, Tony, I actually feel bad in my body. So I need, could you give me a match so I don't have to feel my thoughts anymore than you?
I just, if I bleed, I think I'll feel a lot better.
I think I'll feel a lot better. Can I just go hit something for a while?
It's so funny to imagine going to your boss and being like, Tony, I've been wrestling with dark impulses this week, so I was hoping that I could be allowed to use as much plunder as I desire in my match. And Tony's just like, yeah, sure. If you think that'll help, like, I guess we could get you to a therapist or something too. Big Cope's like, oh, I think the plunder will do
He's
it.
Like, we've got a great EAP program, Copeland. No, okay.
Malachi Black also got a promo in which I missed all of this because the second that man starts talking, my brain goes to Mars. Yeah. Like, I'm just crazy. Not there anymore.
I can't process what his speech, like, when he's talking and I'm like, I can't. I have no idea what he's talking about.
I went and rewatched it after you, like, wrote the little summary in here and I was like, oh, that is what he's saying. But he's saying it in such a way that it makes it impossible to really stick on to, and he's telling it like it's a little parable. He's like, there once was a boy. It's just like, Malachi, cut it out.
His gimmick should be that he starts talking and he just kind of puts his opponent to sleep.
His promos would really be improved if he would, like, do his whole deal and then, like, someone would walk in and be like, what are you talking about? Like, make it, like, a True Detective season one thing, you know, where, like, someone says, like, it's a metapsychotic. It's like, what is your problem? Why would you say something like that?
It's all dark around him and then at the end, someone turns on the lights and he's just in the basement. And
right.
Just like, they're like, dude, have you Malachi, just been down here in the dark this whole
again? Like, there's some weird stuff.
kind of like a sad high school girl listening to Conor Oberst lying on the couch crying about how your friends don't like you. That's what's going on down here. He's like, no, I've actually been doing a lore promo. It's been some really rich, robust lore that everybody loves.
It's my lore promo, Dad. Leave me alone.
Anyway, I guess he said that he thinks that Cope's true nature is, quote, vile, cold-hearted, and evil. So he wants to bring Copeland to the brink of death so that he may live again.
Like, what does that even mean? It's so
kinda
stupid.
I don't know. It's kind of some kind of, like, mad scientist Frankenstein vibes there. I must kill you. So that, yeah, anyway, whatever. So Cope did beat Brody King. Really long match, but it's fine. It's okay. Brody then immediately started attacking him again. So Kyle O'Reilly ran out for the save. And then afterwards, Kyle approached Cope backstage. And Cope was like, thanks for helping me. That was really amazing. And Kyle was like, can I fight for your belt? Can I fight for your belt, please? And I loved Adam Copeland just being like, dude, did you just save me so you can get fight for my belt? And then he was like, well, yeah. I mean, I will let you. But it was a little bit of a vibe of like, okay, well, that's like one of my 13 reasons now, buddy. Like, you don't even want to be, yeah, I'm going to heal her and you don't want to be friends. You just want my GD belt.
And it was like a little bit like, wow, you cheapened the save? You cheapened that moment?
The sanctity of the save.
Thought we were building something, but I guess it was transactional for you.
Kyle's really out there hustling. He's like, if Tony Khan won't give me a title shot, I'll start saving whoever I can, I guess.
Yeah, and Kyle was doing some quite intense face acting, which was a little, I thought was a little out of the norm of what he's been up to recently, because he's had two modes recently. One is 1,000-yard stare, like I'm looking into the grimness of my own past and contending with the evils that I have done. And then the other one is where he gets that kind of blank, like, you know, psycho face, where he's just like, hi, I'm Kyle. I'm a nice guy. I'm happy to be here. But this one,
it's so nice, actually. It's so nice that you're here.
Yeah, his vibe during that promo was so weird because he also was speaking a little fast. He was like, can I fight you? Can I fight you Saturday? And then he's just like, what is happening,
buddy,
right now?
Please. I did not understand from this promo. I'm worried that I sound stupid tonight, but I really don't know what to expect from him going into this match. Like, I'm like, are you going to try and eat him in the ring? Maybe. Like, are you going to fight honorably because you really are being a good boy? Maybe. Are you going to do some other crazy horrible thing I just haven't thought of yet. That seems more likely than the good boy thing, but who knows?
Yeah. It's really, it's hard to know what he's trying to convey, because you're like, well, he's conveying someone who doesn't mean what he's saying very effectively, but is that because he's doing bad acting, or is it because he means, like, he's a little weasel snake? I don't know.
I don't know why he's somehow, like, the most egregious offender in this category in all of wrestling, because there's so many people who will say things and I'm like, yeah, that was horribly acted, but I think I understand what's going on here. Kyle, yeah. For the past, ever since he's come back, and again, love him to death, obsessed with it, I can't get enough of this guy. Every single thing he does, I just think, what is your gig? What is this?
I truly don't know. No. Like, I'm like, what do you want me to be feeling right now?
I guess we'll see what happens when we're back in the trenches on Collision this weekend.
I do kind of want him to make it his gimmick where, like, you know, next he runs out to save Okada, and then Okada's like, thanks, I guess. He's like, can I have a shot of the Continental belt?
It's like, I'm going to get a belt. I'm going to rescue every belt holder in this company.
It'll be Matt Jackson's pleasure to be like, guards, clap him in irons. Clap him in irons and take him to the heel cave. Take him to our deepest, darkest dungeons, guards.
I want so bad for Kyle and Matt to interact again.
I know.
The best part of Undisputed Elite.
When I think about the things that they were getting up to back then, their relationship was so fucking funny.
It was
funny.
So funny.
We're on the same side, and like every time they're in the same room, Matt looks like he's like going to turn into a cat and scratch this guy's eyes out.
And Kyle looks like he knows it, but he can't stop like baiting the cat anyways.
Oh yeah.
And meanwhile, Adam Cole was in the middle of them, pinching the bridge of his nose, being like, please, you two.
Can we just be friends? Can we all just get along? Don't we all just love getting along, actually? So only you. In all of wrestling, Adam Cole, only you. And only shoot you. Anything else that you want to say about Cope?
He is getting these long matches, and it's like, I like him. I don't really object, but it's like, is there nobody else that wants to wrestle? Like, why is this happening?
I experience it in this way that I'm like, I think that there's a period in my life that I would have been very annoyed at him, but for some reason, I am sort of like, well, you know, it's good energy that, like, he's like, I want to finish my career, like, because I guess a lot of people were like, Cope in WWE matches were not that good, and he's like, this, I'm changing my perception. I'm gonna wrestle like crazy. I'm gonna go anywhere you need me to. And like, I just keep being like, yeah, that's like, he's fine. He's doing,
I like the mental image of Cope kind of like frantically backstage, like, a man can change his stars. Tony, give me 20 minutes, Tony. I will show them what I can be.
You know what it also is, though? It's because we know he's, like, taking the ad breaks and stuff that we would not have known or cared about year or two ago.
I think definitely knowing Trish and Sarah has changed us. Where we're like, well, you know.
He's really a team player, though. I mean, really, you know, player. Yeah.
That's so true. I don't feel mad about it, but I feel so generously like, well, it's not always for me. Sometimes I'll just go I'll go get some berries out of my fridge during that.
I bought some raspberries yesterday at the store, and I thought of you, God. And I thought, I'm going to eat all these berries. I'm going to
You want a little hot tip I got? No one's ever thought of this before. Sometimes I cut up all my berries, put them in a bowl, and I just sprinkle a little bit of brown sugar over them, and I eat them while the brown sugar, the berries haven't masticated yet. So the brown sugar is just still kind of grainy, and it's just so nice. It's so lovely. Mm. A little berry bowl. Yum. Well, anyway, that's been our little berry talk segment. Okay, let's move on to hot topic for your girls. Greg versus OC Open Dynamite this week. This match rocked. This was so fun.
so good. They really, I mean, I believe that they were furious at each other and did not care if they won the match, just wanted to kill each other.
Yeah, commentary kept hammering that point home, just being like, I think someone could have won this by now, but they don't seem to be trying to win. They just seem to be trying to murder each other. They really communicated that. They went into the audience. They did that. I loved that spot they did in the audience where the girl, like, next to OC, her... I was like, you're having the time of your life. The best thing that's ever happened to you. I love you. I kiss you. I wish I were you. I'd be scared to be you. Like, this is amazing.
OC just hurdled the barrier from, like, a stop. Like, just jumped straight up.
Yeah. So fantastic. Strong and powerful.
Bleacher Report said something like, it was clear that these two had spent years at ringside for each other, and they knew all each other's wrestling moves and knew how to counter them. And I was like, that's sexy.
Okay, well, that's a little... that's hot. That's hot, soon, actually. Are people talking enough about how, like, cool, sexy it is when it's like...
That the mortifying ordeal of being known is actually really sexy.
It's really sexy, especially when it becomes weaponized.
When a man knows how to counter all your moves because he knows you that well.
Ooh. Because you thought he would never hurt you.
Yeah.
You thought he would never hurt you, so you let him in. You let him in. You let him see your weaknesses.
You didn't know that you needed to be on guard from him?
Oh, my God. Hello? Wow. That's really rough stuff.
Yeah.
So eventually Greg tried to cheat by removing a turnbuckle, but the ref saw and was distracted. So then OC removed a turnbuckle while the ref was distracted, and he managed to slam Greg into it and get the pin. Greg did not stay down. He immediately resumed fighting, and they fought all around the ring, and Greg was thunking him on his head on the stairs, and they make an awful sound. And it did not sound good. And they're doing these kind of little acrobatics I didn't even really understand, where, like, Orange Cassidy is, like, wriggling under what I called the stage. So we're still the girls we were, okay? The fact that I said in the middle of this match, ooh, he's under the stage.
I didn't even clock it. You, like, corrected yourself almost immediately. Yeah. It was like, oh, right, yeah.
I had no problems with that. I was like, yeah, he is under the stage.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they did this whole thing, and then eventually Don Callis had been on commentary, and he came off and kind of took possession of OC, which really troubled and worried me. And Chris came out to yell at Greg, and of course I don't trust that at all. I think you two are doing play acting and loving it.
I'm obsessed with it because it's like Greg being like, yeah, of course, Orange Cassidy, a face, would get scouted by a heel manager. Of course this would be happening. Of course, like, Orange Cassidy, the revered face that everybody loves, fucking cheats and wins. Like, of course all of this is happening. Like, and he's right. Like, that promo that he gave after where he was like, he's a narcissist, as all of them are. I was
all your faves.
All your faves.
Yeah.
That incredible. It was a great promo, and it was... Because, again, it was, like, totally emotionally intelligible, like, legible, coherent. It's just like, yeah, this adds up that it's, like, if you're getting pushed to the brink for a long time, this is how you would break. Right. Where he got kind of baited by the camera guy or whatever being like, how does it feel that OC won fair and square? And Greg's like, are you fucking kidding me? Fair and square? But then the way he's freaking out about it is, like, he can't acknowledge that he was trying to do the same thing. He's just like, no, I was fine the whole time, but, like, of course he had to, like, you know, it was great, where it's like, oh, you're not doing
which
this.
Is exactly good. How it feels to be in the middle of something where you're totally. Like, I am being wronged, all I'm doing is surviving how much I'm being wronged, and it's only afterwards that you're like, oh, I also was misbehaving, but you can't see it in the moment because all you can see are the ways that somebody is fucking you over.
Totally. Yeah. And I almost wish that in that promo, there had been someone there to, like, push on it and be like, but weren't you doing that? Yeah. And to, like, get him to be like, well, I didn't have a choice, because it's like the whole fucking system is like, he has the whole system behind him. Everyone is behind him. Like, everyone tells him all the time that he is worth everything and I'm not worth anything. That's why he's a narcissist. You fucking made him a narcissist.
Yeah. Like, right. Right.
Yeah.
Greg, we have to get the system.
Greg's acting is so good. Like, in the midst really of great. All this, like, wrestling acting where you're like, yeah, we're putting on a play and I can see all the seams and that's fine. But it's like, Greg is, like, a real person really mad out there. Like, all of the face acting he did in the match, he was just so mad. And then in the promos, too, I've been so impressed.
I'm worried that he's getting me onside.
Like, Leah's not. Stop it. Leah's
not. OC's not trying to.
I have to tell you, I'm a little bit like, should we stab OC? He is a narcissist.
He's not a narcissist. He's a sweet boy. He didn't ask for the attention, Leah. He didn't ask for any of this. All he did was fight. All he did was fight his best.
He was supposed to be a mascot. We all thought he couldn't breathe.
Do you think that anybody in life should be relegated to the role of mascot? Should we not be allowed to rise above our station? Okay, you don't do just the caste system? You have disappointed me.
Maybe you
have disappointed me.
You guys should get in the ring for a no DQ match.
What do I say? I've been experiencing dark thoughts. Leah, I am experiencing dark thoughts and impulses. Should we talk about what, of course, really interests us, which is the health and well-being of Chuck Taylor? Is it not our right to discuss?
Kind of the only thing we were thinking about.
Yeah. Everyone's just looking at me. Okay, I can start it. So
I got a little discombobulated for a second. I'm sorry. Before we get into this, I've been hearing a lot of strange noises in my house, and I wasn't sure what to do about it. And then the cat just walked by with the treat container, which is closed. She can't get into it, in her mouth, and she's dragging it like it's a carcass. And she just went into my bedroom with it. And she can't get into it. But how quick did she learn to carry Tupperware?
Anyways, wow.
I do want to talk about Chuck Taylor, but I did have a weird moment just now.
You had to decide between Chuck Taylor and your cat won for a moment.
You know, when you have a son and a daughter, sometimes your attention gets split.
When you have multiple children, it's tough.
Yeah. But during the match, Excalibur started talking about the details of Chuck Taylor's diagnosis, and I think Leah, you heard part of it. So
we'll talk about let's talk about it as like where we were as it happened. So, I watched with Sarah.
Listeners, journey with us. Journey.
So I was with Sarah for the first time in a long time because we decided we needed to be together for this match, and so we're like once we realized that Excalibur was telling us details, we both like leaned in and then started frantically Googling the words that we were hearing, and both of us came up with, it's called a vascular necrosis, and I have to tell you, I did have to rewatch this match because I completely blacked out because I was busy getting a medical degree where I was like deep in, I was like, the bone is dying, and so like, and Sarah's reading from one page, like page to me, and she's like, and it can be caused by this way. And I went treatment, and she was like, another factor contributing. And I went, treatment.
Trinosis. This Grey's Anatomy ass living room. We have to act. Treatment.
We have to act. I've been like down this rabbit hole because apparently this AVN stuff, like if you catch like, so what I was finding out is that like it can happen after an injury where if something gets knocked wrong, the blood to your bone gets cut off and the bone will start dying, which sounded like, you know, like Excalibur was talking about. And so they were saying like, if you catch it early before, you know, damage is done, then it's not that big of a deal. They have to do a bone graft, but it's like a couple weeks.
And do you want to review why we were a little worried that maybe Chuck Taylor hadn't caught it early? the man who just for about a
whole
year
personality.
Kept being like, my wisdom teeth are killing me, but I can't get dental surgery. We're like, we are fucked.
Literally, I think 9 months he was like, I can't sleep because my wisdom tooth is hurting me. And we were like, did you go to the dentist? And he said, no.
Oh my God.
And by we, I mean his Twitch chatters, which I've never participated in.
Yeah, we would never talk to him.
No. But, all right. So all day today, I've still been down this fucking rabbit hole. And in fact, we got our friend Blaine, well, she did it on her own and we were excited about it, to reach out to her dad, who is an x-ray tech, to be like, sir,
what are his chances?
Do you think he'll walk again? Do you think he'll ever ever walk again.
And the answer was kind of like, well, probably not.
The word deformity was used, and I didn't like that. So anyways, that's where I'm at, when I sign on to this very Zoom today. And what happened, Anne?
Yeah, so Leah was saying this all when we were watching, and I had totally missed a Calgary saying that because I was watching the match, I guess, whatever. But
okay, humble brag.
I know. So I was like, oh, I'm going to watch it back because apparently there was like a lot of medical information. So I got on, you know, like 7:30 tonight.
I
or
love
whatever.
That you've picked up a pen now to, just to show us how serious you got.
You know, so then I listened back, and actually the first thing Excalibur said was the actual diagnosis, which was different from what Sarah and Leah were talking about. And so it's actually, what is this? Like, I had to Google it. It sounded like
osteochondritis
dissecans lesion on his ankle, which is still like little, it's like a fragment of bone like breaks off in your ankle, and that fragment's dead. So that's where they ended up with the dead bone stuff. But it's like not the like whole ankle bone. This is a very technical talk, obviously, and I know what I'm talking about.
No, don't worry about it. We have gotten, our bone degrees in the past 24 hours. Don't worry about
basically
it.
Basically, an osteopathic surgeon. Yeah, so anyway, but it's less serious. It usually happens to like teens and young adults and
children and babies, because is Chuck Taylor not a little child and baby to us?
Yeah, all the websites I was reading were like, your child may have these symptoms, and I was like, he probably does. Yeah. And like, it usually with kids like heals up on its own, but like with adults, they'll like put you in a boot and see if it heals, and then if it doesn't, you might need surgery. And then like depending on how bad it is, like it's different kinds of surgery. But it's more like 4 to 5 months out at the very outside, and
this all adds up because he was in a boot.
So he was in a boot.
Yeah. Yep, I think it's been going on for a while. And it sounds like it kind of sometimes just starts happening. Like, it's not even, like, one injury, which also kind of checks out with him. Because, like, I don't think we ever heard, like, that he got injured in a match. But it's, like, kind of a repetitive stress injury is what they think. So,
So Anne tells us that before we start recording, and I did the opposite of blackout, but, like, with happiness. Listeners, as you know, we record on Thursdays. On Friday morning, The Observer and Fightful both reported that the injury is serious and Chuck Taylor is not expected to wrestle ever again. And in light of that, we will not be airing the rest of this section where we experience the feeling of optimism, and we'll instead be replacing it with a little piece that explains our feelings better.
Stop all the clocks. Cut off the telephone. Prevent the dog from barking with a juicy bone. Silence the pianos and with muffled drum, bring out the coffin. Let the mourners come. Let the aeroplanes circle moaning overhead, scribbling on the sky the message, he is dead. Put crape bows round the white necks of the public doves. Let traffic policemen wear black cotton gloves. He was my north, my south, my east and west. My working week and my Sunday rest. My noon, my midnight, my talk, my song. I thought that love would last forever. I was wrong. The stars are not wanted now. Put out everyone. Pack up the moon and dismantle the sun. Pour away the ocean and sweep up the wood. For nothing now can ever come to any good.
Also in the best friend's world, we did see OC backstage with medical later in the show, and Rocky stopped by, and Rocky is rolling up and he's like, hey man, how's it going? Amazing. I'm not listening. I actually got a match with Jay White later. Yeah. And actually Tony said that if we wanted to go for the trios titles that he and the Guns have, we could totally do that. And it could be like you and me and just like a third person of our choice. I don't know. Could be Greg. And OC whips his fucking sunglasses off. He's like, it could be fucking Greg. It could be fucking Greg, who murdered my best friend, who's now dying of bone necrosis. It could be Greg, who just fucking dumped me on my head on a pair of metal stairs. It could be Greg. It could be Greg. And Rocky's like, could be Greg. Totally could be.
Rocky did not hear a better, word man. Of his reply. Rocky was not listening. And he was like, I don't care. I need warm bodies. This is my...
Rocky said, oh, come on, OC. Trio shot? Trio shot tonight, King? Trio shot?
Maybe everyone is a narcissist. I think Greg is right.
Yeah. I'm saying, get on side.
Yeah, I know.
I can appreciate Greg's points while also saying that I don't think he's dealing with them very healthily. Okay?
Maybe if Tony had approved more no DQ matches for him, he could have gotten some of the darkness out.
Maybe if he had gone to Tony and said, I'm having dark impulses. Is it the chicken or the egg, Anne? Where does it start? Whose responsibility is it?
Outside Tony's office, there's just like a long line of wrestlers being like, the darkness needs to come out.
I do like that.
I got the darkness, Tony.
The implication is kind of like, if you go and tell someone, spreads this around, they're like, if you tell Tony that you're having dark impulses, you get like a really long match. Like, you get like a really long good one.
He's like, oh, you need to get the darkness out? Take as long as you need. Don't want the darkness.
We wouldn't want we wouldn't want those dark thoughts floating around your head. Yeah. Have 20, have 30 if you want. Anyway, okay, so then later in the night we get this backstage segment where, was it Lexi Nair? I think it was.
I think it was the new girl.
I can't believe that we have a new person whose name I'm supposed to learn.
Can onboard the name of Lexi Nair. It took me like 3 years to get there. She does not have a lot of personality. Sorry, Lexi.
Okay, well, the new girl whose name I will learn in time, I'm sure, was interviewing a very dry, dead-faced Pac. I mean, the visual here was startling. Pac,
I almost didn't recognize him. Who is this man?
It wasn't right.
You immediately thought, like, this is animal abuse. You are treating him. Like, what? You let him get this dry? This is insane for him.
His skin, his hair, they're all going to start flaking.
It's like you go over to somebody's house and they're like, oh, I have some cool terrariums with some reptiles. And you look in and you're like, they need misted. They can't survive this.
These are
way.
Not healthy.
They need, where's your little sprayer? We need to spray this man down because he is... That's why he doesn't look like he's with it right now. He doesn't have the nutrients that water gives him.
No, he can't breathe. We're Brian Danielson and John Cena's house being like, this aquarium is too small. They're all dry. They shouldn't be in here. They're all right.
They're all dry. Jesus.
Excessive dryness, excessive wetness, it all upsets us. I wish everyone could just find the right moisture level and stick to it.
That rhymed, which was really beautiful. Oh. I was thinking today that it's like wrestlers are like plants, right? Where different plants need different levels of moisture. Mm-hmm. And they need, some of them, they need to dry out all the way before you water them again. But some of them, you've got to keep them quite moist all the time.
Yeah. If an OC was as wet as a Pac, like, you might get some mold issues,
Yes. He'd have root rot. Which he might. At this point, he probably does have root rot.
Might be
dealing with some root rot. His energy last night was root rot.
He said Greg gave me root rot. Okay. Anyway, so then... Jay White comes by with the guns and he mocks Pac for a while. And then I refuse to read that quote. That's unacceptable. And then he goes to have his match with Rocky. And Rocky loses to Jay White. But afterwards, the guns start beating him up anyway, which I always think is so mean. Like, when it's like, well, he lost. Like, you know, is it necessary? Really? Like, if the heel lost and is mad, I understand it. But if the heel won, it's like, can you just go get an ice cream? This is so cruel and pointless and needless. But anyway, so then Pac came out to save Rocky. So the implication, when we rub our little brain cells together, does seem to be that Rocky and Pac and OC will fight Bullet Club Gold for the trios belts, which I'm only interested in if what OC does in the match is mostly sit by the ring and cry. Like, if he is just kind of slumped over against the ring, like, slow crying the whole time, yes, I'm
tagging him in, and he just waves them just off because he's crying so much.
Yeah, that would be okay.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah, I've been so, like, the best friend storyline has honestly been executed so well so far, other than, of course, my panic attacks over Dustin's career. But this whole, like, oh, yeah, let's throw OC with Peck and Rocky feels like just traditional, nonsensical OC booking where it's like you just grab some men, you put them together. It doesn't really make sense. It doesn't really tie into anything. So hopefully it will tie into something because I don't like it.
I'm worried that that's going to be the fucking Double or Nothing match. And I want the Double or Nothing match to be a Greg OC rematch.
Yes. Give me emotional.
I wanted them to have a dog collar match.
Yes. Oh my God, Leah.
Leah. Oh my God.
Okay. Ooh, we're going to need to take some time to onboard that idea.
I agree that I would rather see that, but I'm also not super worried. And of course, it's like Lucy and the football, like, so they could do anything to me. But I'm not that worried that the storyline's going to go off track at this point because they laid breadcrumbs for a long time that turned out to actually be breadcrumbs that were leading to something. And because of what we know about, but what we think we know about Dustin's ankle necrosis, we believe that, there's a period where he won't be around and we think that he will come back. So it's like you got a lot of time to fill. So you're going to have to do some stuff with him that isn't like directly related to the storyline because that's how the best storylines work. It's like you get like a big chunk of them and then you backburner them and then you get a big chunk and then you backburner. So I'm feeling optimistic. But of course, be careful. Tread lightly with our favorite storyline. Tread lightly with our emotional support storyline.
Yeah.
Well, we don't have our emotional support wrestler anymore.
No, I mean,
present. So
we don't have reserves. Like,
no,
there's no well of reserves. You know, we were putting up with Chuck being the world's happiest manager while he did absurd.
And I thought we were being really brave. Yeah. About
really,
it.
Very brave.
Really brave. So, yeah.
The only way I'm going to accept this trio, like with good spirits, is if Dustin is with good ringside with a plate full of oranges, say, good game, guys.
He can't be ringside with a plate full of oranges right now. The man is suffering physically. He is getting surgeries.
He should limp out post-surgery.
With his peg leg.
I don't think he should. I think he should stay home and heal. I think he should stay home and safely.
I think he should do some pre-tapes from home with a plate of oranges, maybe.
I agree that he could do some pre-tapes from home. I keep thinking, did any of you ever read this children's book called What Katie Did?
Yes.
Did you really?
Yes.
Maybe. Or have you talked about it before? It sounds vaguely familiar, but I don't remember.
It could be either, but I believe the plot is that it's like Katie is kind of like headstrong and, she's always getting into trouble. And then eventually in the book, she like does something crazy on a swing and like breaks her back and becomes an invalid and is just like stuck in bed for a long time. And so she has to learn a lot of new mental and emotional skills about like patience and how to, it was kind of a, you know, like a moral, little moral story for children. And then in the next book, she goes to Rome or something. But that's what Katie did next, of course. Anyway.
Where Katie breaks her back and has to learn new skills. And then the one where Katie goes to Rome.
Oh, yeah, this is it. Listen to this. Helen tells Katie, because cousin Helen is an invalid. So Helen is helping her learn how to live as an invalid.
And people used to really be invalids. Just did, and we straight don't, up.
I think we need to bring a little of that terminology back because it's like, we really act like people should either like, are either like dying or they're well and they should act well. No, many people are in the middle. People are in the middle.
A lot of us need to lie down because of our agonies. So
exactly. Look, Helen tells Katie that she is... that she is now a student in the School of Pain.
Oh, no.
Where she
will
learn...
Well, that sounds like a wrestling gimmick.
She will learn lessons in patience, cheerfulness, hopefulness, neatness, and making the best of things. And
neatness.
I keep thinking about what Dustin did, and that's the time that he has off away from this world of wrestling.
He's going to learn some lessons about neatness. Yeah.
He needs to learn some lessons in the School of Pain, and I need to see those lessons being learned. I need them filmed.
Maybe he could have a little YouTube show where he shows us the lessons he's learned in the School of Pain, Dustin.
Free idea. Oh my God. Okay. Yeah, we're feeling good. We're doing well. We're thriving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dynamite's and been we're so fun. We've all our faves are doing the storylines on TV now, which is crazy.
Yeah, that is really nice. On that note, I have been Allie.
I've been Anne.
And I've been Leah.
And this is Tunnel Talk. Our theme is by Chris Corgan. You can find us on Twitter and Tumblr at Tunnel Talk Pod via email, tunneltalkpod@gmail.com. Please rate, review, and subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. You can also find us on the Social Suplex Network feed, along with a lot of other great shows. If you don't know what's really been going on with the Drake Kendrick Lamar stuff this week, you can go check out their special episode of ONR. What I have to say, I learned everything I know about this. I learned from them.
When James is talking about the end where that Kendrick won, and he was like, "For Drake, there was no path to 270." Yeah. I fucking lost it.
Really good stuff. So you can check out ONR and a lot of other great podcasts on the Social Suplex Network feed. You can also join us on the Social Suplex Network Discord, where we're always learning stuff. What did we learn about today? About
how Dickies. The shirt collar used to be called removable bosoms.
Yeah, yeah. Something like that.
Yeah, so we learned a lot about
detachable bosom. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Just the history of the dickie.
Yeah. So that's always an option available to you, is to come learn about removable bosoms with us. Stay frosty. And as always, please come back next week.